Let's just think of some of the things that the Right Honourable Gentleman has introduced. He wants coal mines without mining them, submarines without sailing them, and he wants to be Labour leader without leading them. One thing we know, whoever is Labour leader after their leadership election, it will be the country that loses.
No, just say something. You're the one who wanted to have this reform.
I hadn't really thought it through. Okay, well, hello and welcome to the Rights Honourable podcast. This week we're actually joined by a special guest, Ben Powell. Ben, do you want to introduce yourself to the listeners and explain what it is you do?
Yeah, my name's Ben. I'm a stand-up comedian and I'm also work in Westminster. I write speeches and do research and stuff like that.
I like the order you put those in. Stand-up comedian is first and foremost.
The opposite order of where any money comes from.
Well, you know, it's where the passion lies that really matters.
Yeah, it's why we're clearly not doing this podcast for any monetary gain, because there hasn't been any.
There's been a lot of losses.
Yeah, quite a few losses. Far. Especially if you do it by time. Hi everyone, by the way, I'm Jazza. If you don't know that by now, then you should probably check yourself.
Yeah, Jazza is still with us, unfortunately. Or fortunately.
Rude.
What topics are we doing this week,
Jazza? This week, so the former Prime Minister, the Right Honourable David Cameron, has decided that he's been too much of a distraction after the myriad of stories we've seen of him over the summer. Spoiler alert, there haven't really been any. But because he's been a distraction, and he wants Theresa May to be able to get on with her job as the new PM, he's decided to step down as an MP.
That was that story about him, like, I think it was on Guardian Fox or something, like checking his phone during a Commons debate. It wasn't much of a story.
That's the only one that he's been into as well. What was funny, though, is he insisted on getting nice offices in Westminster after he wasn't the Prime Minister anymore.
Really?
And I think some...
It might be
some Welsh nationalists or some other MPs who've had the offices for a while, like, hoofed out of them. And then he gets in there for, like, 10 minutes and then...
And then buggers off. Who gets the offices now, though?
I do.
Ben's giving us the inside Westminster scoop. It's very exciting.
That is exciting.
Then after we finish talking about Mr. Cameron, we're going to talk about the fact that there's boundary changes to the MP's constituencies.
There's proposed boundary changes.
Proposed boundary changes. Yeah. But it's all very exciting. Like, it's really wonky. But
we can get into the nitty-gritty of what the Boundary Commission have done and the parameters within which they had to act. And I won't get up with
it. Can you actually tell us any of that information?
I can say what I want now, because nobody's listening anymore after I've just said that.
That's a fair point.
So why not?
Don't worry, Ben. Nobody was really listening anyway. Feel free to prove us wrong by engaging with us on Twitter. We're not desperate.
That was a great...
I know.
Great social media link.
I know, right? I know. And then finally, we're going to turn our eye to America land, because Hillary Clinton isn't feeling very well. Bless her. And there's been a quite unnerving video of her basically collapsing. She gets into a car. She had to call her 9/11 memorial event short because she had to have a lie down. And now the conspiracy theorists are running riot. Well, brilliant for her. She's definitely going to win.
So Jazza, in his usual pessimistic forecast for another election.
I made a video about the fact that Donald Trump is going to win and I need to stick by those guns. Hey!
Is it working now?
Yes,
I can see sound waves. So you're probably not the biggest fan of David Cameron then, I'm guessing, after all that's happened over the past couple of months.
I'm not a big fan of him, and I think the thing that makes me...
Why is that?
The thing that makes me like him least, and I think people are going to have to look me up, but I look from, like, at least a little
bit... I enjoyed
bit
that shameless plug, Ben, that was really good.
No, I look a little bit like a squashed version of David Cameron.
Oh my god.
Everybody
Google Ben Powell.
We're now examining Ben.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Which, I think the fact that he's gone will eventually mean...
People will stop saying that you look like a squash version.
When I'm walking into work in Westminster, people from like the other side of Westminster Station would stop going, is it? Oh no, it's just a short fat of it.
Oh, Blair.
That's the worst thing that he's done.
That's the worst thing. That's not terrible,
is it? Look like a stretched meat. No, it's...
So, the weird thing is that he's had the privilege of having two political obituaries in about 3 months, which is odd. So, he stepped down as PM. Had a load of people saying how he was always going to be remembered as the Brexit Prime Minister, and then stepped down as an MP, and he's now being told that he'd always be remembered as the Brexit Prime Minister. So, like, everybody basically just re-ran the stories that they'd run after he stepped down, right?
I never thought he'd hang around, to be honest, like, because he doesn't seem that interested in politics for a man who ended up as Prime Minister.
Or at least not interested in being a constituency MP, which I think is really different to, for example, Nick Clegg, who does seem genuinely really, really interested in being...
What's the story that came out today on The Guardian that suggested Nick Clegg would stand down at the next general election?
I think he has to decide in the next few months.
He's going to have to decide quite quickly as well, because his constituency won't exist anymore.
Yeah.
But more on that later.
More on that story later.
Cameron is a really odd one, because... He doesn't seem as if he's been the Prime Minister for ages, but he was.
But he's been the Prime Minister for the last 6 years.
He was also Tory leader for ages, wasn't he?
Yeah, since 2005?
Yeah,
It's weird. And because Tony Blair, that genuinely seemed like ages. And
it was ages for Tony.
Yeah, well, it was. I mean, but Cameron's the leader of the Tories for kind of that length of time. It was a long time. And by every measure he gave himself, he failed. But yeah, I think people...
No, but so had he won the Brexit vote, I think people would have seen him as a very successful PM, one who took a load of risks, but
they paid off.
Yeah, that but because the risks at the end didn't pay off. Everyone's like, you're a twat. And also all of the people who are Conservative voters who wanted to remain in the EU, and there are a lot of them, despite what many people may think. Like, they genuinely berate him because he gambled the future of the country and lost, basically.
I think the problem with Cameron at the EU was every time he went to Europe and came back to Parliament just to appease the backbench, he was like, I had a battle with them all and I won and blah, blah, blah. And the EU is terrible for this reason, that reason, this reason. And then he came out, like, a year later saying, oh, we should stay in it. And you go around knocking on doors and everyone's, like, repeating to you things David Cameron said about the EU.
Yeah.
It's quite difficult to say, yeah, but he was just saying that to try and look cool in front of his mates, but really.
Pretty much. But that was basically all of his premiership seemed to be him trying to abate and keep on side his party that weren't that into him, like the right wing of his party, right? That's what the Brexit vote was, that's what a lot of his policy was. It was him trying to control his party rather than trying to run the country.
So, but other than, say, equal rights, which he did quite a bit on, especially for Tory, what would you say he did that was a success? Because I don't think he did anything that...
Well, get same-sex marriage.
I'm giving him that one.
They do that bit on about that. I love that you pointed at me and went,
marriage. No, I was pointing in the general direction of you.
Jessica can get the marriage now.
You were bitching about it earlier, so now you can get it.
Fair. Know? I am consistently... on brand about gay marriage, to be fair. But he brought in a lot of stuff, like, or instigated a lot of stuff, like reform to the NHS, that people who are on our side of things probably wouldn't think that he's doing particularly well, but people would say that he's...
Who's that R? I'm not sure I'd include myself.
Do you think that he did a really good job on the NHS?
I'm a bit sceptical. You're actually heavily involved with the NHS.
Yeah, so I work advising Labour on health, basically. So I'm massively biased, but also I've read a lot about it. So you have to make your own mind up. But I don't think there's anyone senior in the NHS who thinks that the 2012 reforms were anything but a disaster. Really, I think that
were they just a waste of time, or were they actually damaging?
I think they were damaging. One of the things that they did, for example, was take away any control in a sort of regional strategic sense. This is really interesting, but...
no, let's get into the wonkish nitty-gritty. Yeah.
Basically, there was something called strategic health authorities, and there was 10 of them that sort of dealt with health over regions, and when that went away, I think a lot of things just stopped making a lot of sense.
Yeah, but it was the cutting of red tape, though. And that's
people hate middle managers until they're not there.
Yeah, and then it's like, ah.
I mean, what they've done is... create a situation where the NHS didn't have any deficits to one where it's almost all massively in deficit and could be fucked forever. And to me, that isn't a success.
I think that's fair. I don't think that's a bias.
While at the same time, every target effect is being missed, pretty much.
I love that I'm going to have to be kind of like the Cameron Devil's advocate here. But how about reforms to state-funded education in academies and free schools? I'm just like feeding you a watermelon. I don't want you to pat these back to me.
I think the one thing you can say from education is that he didn't think the grammar schools were a good thing. And selective education. And so, on the basis of that, he could have been worse, I suppose we can say. I think the free school thing, in my view, isn't sensible because previously they used to build schools where there weren't enough places for school children, so if classes were overcrowded, they might build a new school if there's too much demand. Now they build it where there's like middle class parents who think that they need their own school.
I mean, have you met any middle class parents recently? They all think that they can run things better than everybody else. I was having a really long conversation with my parents like a couple of days ago about how they think grammar schools are a fantastic thing and how it would have been really good for me and my brother if we'd have been able to go to grammar schools, and I reminded them that both me and my brother took the 11 plus and failed, which is why we went to a private school.
It still would have been good, but you were just too thick.
Thick at the age of 11, funnily enough, which wasn't when I had all of my ducks in a row. Sorry for not doing that.
Excuses.
Yeah. No, fair. If not on those two topics, because I'm struggling to think of any other significant changes that Cameron made.
Libya's gone really well.
There was today a report came out that basically berated Sarkozy and Cameron for entering for leading a task force that overturned the Libyan government and eventually ended up overthrowing Gaddafi.
I sort of feel that Cameron should probably get the same amount of heat that Blair got over Iraq for Libya, because it appears to be like the same level of fuck up.
But people don't see it. So they said that because there was a lack of strategic plan for after the overthrow happened, that allowed for the Islamic State, so-called Islamic State, or Daesh, whoever, what should we call them now? That allowed for them to have become a stronghold in North Africa. And that's a pretty dire thing to be accused of. It's like, you're the reason that IS are doing really well.
How was Cameron to know, though, in his defence, that going into that bit of the world, removing a dictator and then just leaving would create a power vacuum? Because
just if we haven't had experience in that. But the reason that he isn't berated in the same way that Blair is for Iraq and Afghanistan is because we didn't have troops on the ground. I feel like that's the main reason, right? There weren't British lives in the line of fire,
I suppose.
And so we didn't have as much investment as a country in it.
There was a less week in, week out thing of like the Prime Minister standing up at PMQs and saying, you know, I express my condolences to Sergeant blah 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 blah, and so on, which I remember is very heavily, you know, true of the Iraq war and the war in Afghanistan as well. But that's just a media focus thing, really. That shouldn't be the ultimate arbiter of, you know, how successful his premiership was.
He didn't say that Gaddafi could launch weapons in 45 minutes. He just didn't. He just didn't really say anything. And then he was like, "Yeah, he's
at least there's a silver lining." Is there anything positive that we can pull from his premiership at all? Because we are just kind of rinsing him. And that seems to be a lot of the response in the media as well. A lot of his political obituaries have been basically saying he was a bit shit.
He had absolutely no vision for what he wanted to do with the country.
Saying that phrase.
There's probably like a few good policies. There's a few areas that, you know, historians will rake over and they'll come up and they'll say, yeah, that was good. I'm not a historian, you know. But I'm sure that historians will find some things that he did well, even inadvertently.
What if it is just gay marriage and it wasn't him that came up with it? It was Lynn Featherston.
Yeah.
Like, she did all of that.
She invented it.
Yeah, did you see her book? Lynn Featherston was the Liberal Democrat MP who first brought gay marriage to the floor in the House of Commons.
Right.
And basically is the person who instigated gay marriage. And she released a book after she lost her seat and then got put in the Lords. Liberal Democrats taking seats in the Lords. Awkward. That was basically same-sex marriage or equal marriage. How I made it happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, Lynn, wasn't you. It was decades and decades of like queer activism. Wasn't you standing up in the House of Commons and saying something that most people agreed with? Was it now? But anyway, she was very nice in that garden party we met her at.
She was, yeah.
I think it could have been a lot worse, but I think the one thing that people thought would be his legacy was fixing the broken economy, but but he didn't. And also, then Brexit happened, and now they've just accepted the fact that everything's fucked.
Yeah.
I mean, the best thing that came out of Brexit is the admission that having a target to reduce the deficit by a certain date is stupid.
And yeah, at least yeah. we got something out of Brexit. Thanks for that, Jimmy.
It wasn't me, personally.
I'm holding you responsible for like the million and so people who tipped it over the edge.
Just on the economic point, how do you feel that like George Osborne's career is going to go from here? Because some people have said he's going to flounder in the wilderness for some years and then come back potentially as a cabinet minister under a different government. Where do you feel that he's going
to
go?
He wants to carry him in an MP, doesn't he?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but his constituency's sort of being abolished, but we'll see what happens with that. But why doesn't he just fuck off and sell wallpaper again? Right? What's he going to contribute now? Exactly.
So this is like a big thing that is going to affect Parliament big time. There has been an independent commission that has said that we need to... Well, the government has decided we need to reduce the number of MPs from 650 to 600. They've got to cut 50 MPs from... those that already exist, which means new boundaries for constituencies. They have a remit for making them more equal in terms of size of population.
It's about 7,000 voters per constituency, isn't it?
7,000? No.
Have I got that wrong?
No.
Yeah. 70,000.
70,000. Yeah. Like, almost definitely.
That's a zero, mate.
Not
important.
What does that do? So George Osborne... So there's some really big hitters who are going to be affected by this, specifically in their constituency.
There's actually loads of big hitters.
Loads. I think that that's actually a really positive thing because it does show that... I genuinely believe when the commission said that it hasn't taken political standing into account with it, and it hasn't taken into account the politics of it and all of that. I genuinely believe that because on the one hand, George Osborne's seat isn't going to exist, and on the other hand, Jeremy Corbyn's seat isn't going to exist, which is going to be really interesting in terms of the Labour leader having to contest a completely new seat. How is that going to work?
Either that, or he's got to try and kick one of two women out of their seats, which...
Yeah. So who are the two women? It's Diane
Abbott and Emily Thornberry.
Yeah.
It's you Bezzies, really.
Yeah, the only two people who do any airtime for him at all.
Admittedly, but they do airtime.
Diane, I think, does a very sterling job, seeing she has to do every single television appearance throughout the day in order to defend his stance. Emily Thornberry shouldn't be able to do anything.
I mean, she can't do anything, so, I mean, that much is true.
So you might know this, Ben. What happens with all-women shortlists? Because Jimmy read something on Reddit.
I read something vaguely that, like, when a seat becomes available, like a new seat for the Labour Party, for Westminster, they have to consider using all-women shortlists? Like, what's the process?
Yeah, and usually if there was a female MP before, you'd use an all-women shortlist.
Right, yeah.
Again, That's pretty much it. I mean, they have to just... They're trying to push it and push it until we have 50% female MPs, and then they might reconsider the policy. And at the moment, I think we're on, 42%, 43%. Mm-hmm. So we're much closer now than we've ever been before. But, yeah, it's essentially that every seat, they kind of weigh up. Mm. And there could be special reasons in a certain seat that it shouldn't be an all-women shortlist.
So that's presumably what will be invoked in Corbyn's case, then, if his seat's... You said his seat's being abolished, right?
Yeah, Islington North is going to be incorporated into the other Islington seat.
So will he just get one of the other Islington seats off Thornberry or Abbott?
Not necessarily, because there's a process... The Labour Party's got its own process on it, but I think if you've got 40...
More wonky stuff,
if you've got 40% of your current territory in the new constituency, you have a territorial claim to it.
Right.
And then you can go for the selection to that, but he might be up against... Either Diane or Emily, I guess. But they'll have some kind of plan that will...
They'll stick him in a seat in the north somewhere, won't they? It won't matter to him where he is. Although, actually, he's a big constituency MP, isn't he? Yeah. He loves being...
That's part of his whole shtick, isn't it?
They'll probably figure something out.
It's one of the only positive things about him.
Gosh.
Yeah, true.
I think he's got a very strong mandate. I think the I think the Boundary Commission did a very good job from what I've seen on compared to last time, especially given the parameters in which they had to work. But I think the parameters in which they had to work weren't very good.
Do you think that we should be reducing the number of MPs to 600? Why?
I can't see any argument for it. I mean, having worked for MPs in the past, I know the demands in them in terms of workload of casework, the amount of people who... Because people write to MP about everything. People who should be getting in touch with the council or councillors or whatever. I mean, if there's a street light outside their house doesn't work, they go to their MP. Mm-hmm. Or if they're at a complete crisis point and they're homeless and whatever and they're in loads of debt, they go to their MP. A lot of the MPs have a lot of demands on them anyway in terms of that. And there's more people now than there used to be. So I don't see an argument.
But do you not see an argument in us kind of ironing out the sizes of constituencies? Because I think the smallest one is like 20,000, which is like the Shetland Islands.
Is the Highlands the Highlands the biggest one in terms of...
There's a couple in North Scotland that have population. like a large surface area, but tiny number of people. And so a single vote there counts a lot more than in, say, central Birmingham, where they have over 100,000 people to a seat in some cases.
The thing is, you could iron out those differences but keep the number of MPs the same.
I absolutely agree with equalising the constituencies. One of the problems they've got, and I don't know why they've done it, but they set the point at which they'd use the electorate from as being, I think it was in December...
It was the 2015 election is what they're basing it on.
No, I think it was December 2015. It was a bit further on.
Okay. Yeah.
But it was before the referendum and before...
Yeah, and before all of the new people were added to the electoral register.
Exactly, so there's 2 million people missing from their calculations when they're working out how to equalise them. So by definition, they're not going to be equal. One thing I've never understood is why they base it on electorate and not on population. You'd have slightly different electorates, but each MP would represent the same number of people, so isn't that kind of...
And then also, they're having a consultation at the moment, so the proposals aren't finalised now. They're currently looking at whether or not there's certain cultural reasons why somebody would want to have a particular area in a certain seat rather than another one. I'm assuming that splitting Derby and Nottingham down the middle and making sure that they don't have to share the same MP, because that would be awkward.
In the last time they did it, my hometown was split in two, and the new constituency that was created went across like three different local authority areas, and it crossed a river, which you'd have to drive like a 40 minute round trip to, and a 40 minute trip even, just to get from one side of the constituency to the other, because you have to like physically drive round till you got to a bridge at the River Mersey. And so it didn't make any sense, and I think they tried to keep communities together and towns together. At least using big enough blocks that it kind of makes sense. And I don't think they've done it too badly. One that has been going around the internet, though, is that I think Walthamstow Town Hall wouldn't be in the...
Oh, that would be hilarious. Oh, amazing.
But I don't think they've done too badly. But yeah, I mean, I think the problem was the task they were asked to do. And
What's your... So I actually think that reducing the number of MPs is a good idea, because I don't think we need 650. It's one of the biggest chambers in the world.
If their casework is already overloaded for each one, you reduce the number of MPs and the casework per MP goes up.
But then, like Ben was saying, I think that a lot of that is just directing people into the right way, and because of MP ego, perhaps, they end up taking on a lot of that work because it would be bad. It would look bad for them to offload people onto the council or to any kind of local authority.
I think they still would, but also I think people like their MPs being an accessible local champion now, and I think if constituencies got too big, they had less their ability to do that. And do we want a kind of American system where the MP, your like representative, goes to Congress or goes to Parliament and does their job there and reports back to you, and they're not there as much? Or do you want an MP who's really accessible?
They're only there like 4 days a week at the moment anyway, aren't they?
They are, but I don't know, it just slightly lessens that ability, and it's like makes it harder for people to get older MP than it is now. And when we've got the second biggest legislative chamber in the world in the Lords...
I was hoping this would come.
I just think that if you're going to talk about reducing the cost of politics...
Get rid of the fucking lords.
Yeah, while you're
or
being,
at least some of them.
While you're being accused, if you've been accused of doing it to increase your party's chances, your case is going to be weakened.
How many
by
are there now? There's like over 800.
Yeah.
Right. Lords, and it's the second largest legislative chamber in the world after the Chinese, which is
more than 1,000.
Which is fucking insane.
But that's for 1 billion people.
Yeah, but yeah. Also for 1 billion people. Like, understand.
I mean, also it's really the largest legislative chamber because the whatever the name is of the Chinese legislature, it's just a rubber stamping body anyway.
Yeah.
Whereas you know the House of Lords has 1,000
people to rubber stamp.
That is true. Yeah.
What you? I mean. What I would say, and this is getting really wonkish now, but in other countries with smaller main chambers like Germany or America, or whatever, they've actually got a lot more devolution to states. So
that's true. Yeah.
And they're a quasi-federal system often, so they don't. It's not as important the role of an MP, but yeah, I just think if they were really serious about cutting the cost of politics, they'd do it through getting rid of the lords or cutting.
I do agree
down,
with that, but I don't think that them reducing the amount of MPs is a bad thing because they're not doing it for the lords. I think they should do it for the lords as well.
What's the argument in favour of having less MPs?
And it's moving down to 600, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
And why not 550 if you're such a fan of reducing the number of MPs, or 500 or...
Yeah. Because there is a point where it becomes such a drastic reduction. I think that maybe something over a period of time where this move to lower the number of MPs would gradual would be perhaps a
little
better.
I think in the system we've got at the moment, though, the front benches, would they be if it was full, but certainly the government, is such a huge number of MPs when you look at it that if you water down the number of MPs too much, the government's a disproportionate part of that, and it's a disproportionate part of the governing party.
That's
so,
a good argument.
So this is actually,
there's not that many backbenchers around.
So there was a piece in the New Statesman that showed that this disproportionately affects Labour, with 11 seats going from Wales, like 30 something seats going from England,
and then five from Scotland.
Five from Scotland.
Is Northern Ireland not affected at all?
One seat loses.
Okay,
but Wales is like disproportionately affected than the rest of the country. Wales is also a Labour heartland, and we can kind of see that across the whole of the UK when you see the map.
Mm.
It does seem to be Labour seats that are more affected by this.
They've got a really funny way of trying to make it look like Labour gained from the current system.
Mm-hmm.
I know that if a Tory's here, they laugh at me at that, and they say, "Well, they do blah blah blah." But I was looking it up, right? And across the UK, I calculated the number of votes needed per MP, looking at parties, and the Conservatives needed 34,242 votes to get an MP.
You've done your maths, haven't you?
And Labour needed 40,290 votes to get an MP. So Labour needed 6,000. They've got 6,000 more votes per MP than the Conservatives. So I don't see how that's Labour losing out from the system necessarily.
Is it fairer under the new system, or does it skew?
It skews it even more in favour of the Conservatives,
right,
basically.
Okay.
So the Conservatives already do best out of that system. The Greens had, you know, over 1 million votes for one MP. UKIP had nearly 4 million votes for one MP.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a system that's against the Conservatives at the moment.
But is that based on the current standing of Parliament, right? And that is something that is in flux, like, all the time. It depends on how people vote.
It does, but it doesn't strike me as being exactly the way to solve a problem of one party disproportionately benefiting from the system.
Do you know how we fix that, though?
I know exactly.
Representation.
Here's my final fact that I can't...
Oh, excellent. I love it. It was a maths then. I'm very happy you came.
The Conservatives got 36.8% of the vote, but they have 50.8% of MPs. But they think that they need to...
It's the most unfair result in terms of, like, the amount of the overall vote of the winning party ever was 2015. Something like that. I watched a CGB Grey video about it, so it must be true.
And this will...
They're really good graphics.
There are good graphics, yeah.
And this will skew it further, so, I mean... Yeah, I don't think they've got... I think it's naked to the eye what they're doing, you know? But I think the one thing...
It's an independent inquiry. I do believe that it is independent.
Oh, no,
it's just ended up...
The Boundary Commission have been given a job to do...
Mm.
I think they've done the job really well, they've done it independently, but...
The job was skewed from the start.
Yeah, but the job isn't the right job for them to do. I don't think they've done it badly, I just think...
So if you were to... I know you don't necessarily want to reduce the number of MPs, but how would you go about reducing it to make sure that it were not as shit?
I don't think I'd be reduced the number of MPs and equalising constituencies if I was trying to solve the problem of one party having an unfair advantage. I think I'd be looking at a different voting system.
So not first past the post?
No.
Which system is your preferred one?
There's so many to choose from.
There are many to choose
from,
yeah.
I'm so torn on this. I think the idea of constituency based but a top-up list is good, but then it
like what they have in Scotland.
Yeah, but then it creates kind of two classes of representatives, but is that a bad thing in a way? I don't know.
All the systems have problems.
Yeah,
right,
I mean, so. The PLR system has a big problem with the notion of a list, because to be on the list...
then you might don't have a constituency MP. But then you can get the councils to do that.
But also with the list, it kind of creates the idea that it's harder to be a rebel backbencher and still be on the list.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all fraught, but I think there's got to be a way of doing it proportionally However fraught they are, I guess, a proportional system is still far superior to what we've got now.
Do you not look at the current system, though, and think at least UKIP don't have however many MPs they'd have given the amount of votes they got?
I think, though, if you claim to be a Democrat and then say, hey, at least the current system stops people voting for this party and having them be represented.
Yeah, that I feel like that argument just gives more... like, what makes more people want to vote for the outsiders like UKIP and... like the Greens or even the Lib Dems now. We're outsiders.
I think they're going to be... Well, I say we.
I'm still including you
I
in
think
that.
You are going to be even more outside after the next general election.
Yeah, I agree.
I think 8 MPs is going to look quite good.
I don't know. I feel like some of the South West will come back.
I think the Lib Dems might make some waves, but I think...
The only way is up. Baby.
And there's still a bit of a way down to go.
Talking about the Labour Party as well, I've got this theory that I've been developing recently that the splits, the fragmentation of the Labour Party, they've always kind of been there, but beneath the surface, are a symptom of a failed voting system. Because you have to have this...
Because you have to have grand coalition.
This big... Labour's a coalition that... isn't, you know, at least if it was a coalition in Parliament, it would have the chance to show its differences. But Labour's always been a coalition between various different parts of the left, and
as has the Conservative been a coalition of various parts of the right.
I think the Tories are better disciplined, though, aren't they?
And also, the right in general is a lot better disciplined.
It's far better than the right.
Goose stepping.
Yeah.
I think the bulk of the Conservatives are right wing, but less ideological than a lot of people within the Labour Party as well, and I think that's helped them because...
That's interesting, because I don't think people would have said that until last year.
Matthew Paris, who used to be a Tory MP, now writes for The Spectator, wrote an article saying that being in the Tory Party is all about, like, summer lunches and barbecues and shit like that. It's not... So I think that's been true for a while, because, I mean, it's the whole thing about the Tories being kind of old as well as a party. And, yeah, old people have a reputation for being sort of, say, kind of racist or, you know, extreme in that sense. But I think they're less, like, radical in their politics and less, like, everything has to change now.
Labour, at default, is a party of opposition that protests.
It's a progressive party.
We only think about it slightly more differently because we grew up at a time when Labour was incredibly strong with the Tony Blair.
Yeah, and what New Labour was the opposite of that. It was a populist party of government, was his vision, but having some people who now want a sort of populist party of government and some people who want a radical opposition in the same party is making life extremely difficult, obviously, and it's going to be fraught. And I think, would there be a Labour Party we've got in now with a PR system? No, I don't think there would.
I'm going to ask you the question that I feel like I have to ask anybody affiliated to the Labour Party. What happens after Corbyn wins? Do you split?
Wins the leadership election, you mean? Just to be clear.
Not 2020.
Yeah, yeah.
Although, place your bets. You'll get really good rates now.
I think, firstly, what I'd say is, if you're opposed to Corbyn, for those of you who were opposed to Corbyn and resigned and started this whole process off, it was a monumentally stupid move. It was completely the wrong time to try and do it, even on their own terms, and I think it was destined to fail. And I think it was a really, really poor bit of judgment from them people who are involved in doing it now. So they're probably just going to have to come back, tail between their legs, and try and get on with it. I mean, there is a job of work of opposition to be done. And for the most part of it, everybody does agree.
Mm-hmm.
Their argument was Corbyn's unelectable, he's not going to win the next election. They'll have been shown to have lost that argument, I guess, once they've gone through this leadership election. So Until they've got...
Not to have lost the argument that he's unelectable, but that he's...
Well, they lost it among the Labour Party members, at least by definition, because they lost the vote. So I think until they've got a better reason to try and, you know, force another leadership election or whatever, you know, they've either got a...
But the Brexit vote was good reason enough. Like, I think an opportunity like that isn't going to come around.
No, I don't think it was. I think what happened when everyone resigned... By the way, I'm 100% certain that there was no plot. Because I think if there was one, it would have been a plot rather than a sort
but
of...
But during the day when everyone resigned, it was like every half hour or something, a new person was resigning.
Yeah, but the issue with that was, it was people trying to get hold of Jeremy Corbyn to tell him they were going to resign first before... Doing it through the media,
I feel like it had to be coordinated.
There was people genuinely finding out their colleagues have resigned through the media, and
then saying I'm going.
And I know there's all talk, you know, people texting each other and all sorts to find out what each other are doing, and then
surely there must have been some texting.
They would be using WhatsApp now. There's a shared group.
Okay. People would have been asking each other, but I don't think there was this conspiracy when everyone decided to resign on the hour or whatever.
So you're saying that Hillary Benn. He was the first to resign, right?
No, Hillary Benn was sacked.
Was fired, yeah.
So he was sacked, and then somebody else said, I can't remember who
was. Heidi Alexander was the first.
So she saw that Ben had been sacked and she was like, okay, well, I'm going. And then it just spiralled from there.
Yeah, but Hillary was apparently sacked for trying to start a sort of rebellion or saying something disloyal. But
he said, I think that you were shit during the election campaign, basically, didn't he?
Yeah, and he was.
Referendum,
but what it was an emotional reaction to... The Brexit vote.
And we all had one of them, let's be fair.
But I think in politics, you can't let an emotional reaction determine how you act. You have to think of things with really, really cold logic, and I don't think that's what they did in that case.
But what is the future of the Labour Party under Corbyn? Like, what's... Because, the argument for a split is actually quite good. I don't think Labour will split, because I think the emotional attachment...
If they split, they'd have to keep... We've talked about this. They'd have to keep the brand.
I don't actually think the Labour brand is actually worth that much.
It is.
Yeah, it's worth so much.
If you knock on doors in a North West constituency, a lot of people always vote Labour, always will vote Labour. I think it's a valuable thing. I don't think there's any value in splitting, because if you split, you'd have to have an electoral pact, and then have you really split...
Have to have an electoral pact with the people you split
from. Yeah, in the current system.
If they split now, you'd have, like, I'm going to call them the Blairites. I realise, you know, it's a contagious term, but the Blairites...
Those of the centre-left rather than the left.
The moderates, if you like, would elect a new leader, and then they would be the new opposition, the new official opposition. Yeah. Corbyn would just be part of some, like, weird subgroup, similar to the independent Labour Party in Labour's very early days.
Yeah.
And that would be a better arrangement from the moderates' point of view, wouldn't it?
I don't think it would. I mean, I think we're going to have to come up with a way... I think shadow cabinet elections, which have been proposed, are one way in which we can hopefully get a bit of a compromise position where the PRP picks the people in most of the leading positions, but Corbyn's obviously in one as well. But, I mean, who knows what the future holds? Because it's like... I'm sorry, because I'm supposed to have some sort of inside knowledge, but nobody 18 months ago saw Jeremy Corbyn as leader of the Labour Party.
No, do you remember? I did go back and listen to our podcasts from...
There were some bad predictions.
Yeah, we made some terrible, terrible predictions.
Nobody saw David Cameron resigning on Corbyn's watch, and that not being something that was celebrated as a success of Corbyn. You know, nobody quite saw the Brexit vote come in.
No.
So I can't really necessarily make a good judgment call, but I think what we're going to see straight away is people just realising they're going to have to knuckle down and get on with the job. And I think they're at least being done a massive favour by Theresa May talking about grammar schools and probably like bringing back jousting in slates.
Are you saying you'd not be behind the jousting thing?
I'm down for jousting.
Yeah.
I think it would be funny, yeah. Why can't kids do conkers and just hit each other in the face with conkers? Bring back bullying, you know,
health and safety, comrade.
I'd like us to... There's no way of segueing into Hillary Clinton.
Well, health and safety.
Speaking of health and safety, Hillary Clinton's health. Seamless.
And safety.
We just had the 15th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks on the Twin Towers in New York, and Hillary Clinton, who, if you have been living under a rock, is the Democratic nominee for president, a lady person, of 68 years old, I believe. So
she was 69.
Well, hey. She's around 68 or 69.
She's old.
She's knocking on 70. As a lady of that age, people have been theorising about her health for a long time.
Mainly you Breitbart.
I mean Breitbart and right-wing conspiracy sites. They were given a ball to play with over the weekend when there was a video that was released of her collapsing after leaving an event for the 9/11 attacks early. Have you guys seen the video?
Yeah.
Holy shit, isn't it terrifying? Because she can't stand up.
It's just an old woman collapsing, though.
It's somebody with, pneumonia who soldiered on and tried to do their job.
No, I completely agree. But it looks terrible, doesn't it?
But she'd done her job while at the event. She got to leave a bit early. The only bit that was weird was her being filmed stumbling into a taxi.
Being dragged into a taxi.
I mean, having witnessed a lot of politicians closely, and my old boss, who was in his 60s, but I wouldn't say he ever came to that level, but if you're doing day by day sort of campaigning day in day out,
she's going to end up the most powerful person in the world.
As soon as you get behind the scenes in that campaign, people look knackered and absolutely ruined. And I've seen that closely with a lot of different politicians. And the difference here is that we kind of. A, she was ill and somehow carried on, which I think is amazing.
So do you think that there's something quite worrying about the fact that her team decided to not say that she had walking pneumonia and only decided to respond to it after that video was released?
I think given that Trump's been peddling stuff about her health for a while anyway, it put pressure on them to not say anything. But also knowing politics the way I do, any sign of weakness is not something...
Weakness I don't have a problem with. I don't have a problem with Hillary Clinton getting sick because people get sick. But the fact that they tried to bury it, and the fact that they tried to brush it all off with her walking outside before she went home and going, yeah, I'm fine now, it left a really bad taste in my mouth. And me as somebody who obviously would rather, I've predicted that Donald Trump will win, and I still think that he will probably win,
The polling doesn't suggest that.
The polling suggests that it's going his way, though. And I don't think... I think that this is going to be a terrible thing.
I'm not convinced that it does.
Jez's argument is that it's, trending towards Trump having a better chance, but it's still heavily on Clinton's side.
Firstly, on American politics is weird in that we sort of flirted with the idea as well but our version of flirting with it was having... men who look the same in their 40s all standing for election, and it was a dehumanising politics, and the American sort of presidential candidates, that they try and do everything they can to not be human, and these sort of campaigning machines, and what it did is it exposed the fact that if somebody's ill they should just say that they're ill, I guess.
Do you think that it's do you think it's the American people's right to know as much as possible about the presidential candidate's health? Because neither have been particularly forthcoming in releasing huge amounts of their health records, despite the fact that Donald Trump is the oldest nominee since Reagan, I believe.
Yeah.
He's 71 or 72? 70.
Yeah. Yeah. They're both like grandparent age, aren't they? It looked weird in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're a great grandparent age,
if you're from where I'm from, or some area.
Yeah, I would say, but yeah.
I'm only joking. But I think there's a lot of misogyny about Hillary Clinton as well, because it's been bandied about that she's 68, but nobody mentioned the fact that Bernie Sanders was over 6,000 years old.
I think that that was mentioned.
It was mentioned, but then Bernie Sanders exudes life, in an old guy way.
I remember there being response videos to this of him jogging to podiums and stuff.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, he was quite an old person. I lied when I said that Donald Trump was the oldest nominee since Reagan. It was actually John McCain in 2008.
Okay.
So he was 72 and was going to be 80 if he did two terms. And John McCain released over 1,000 pages of his health records. Now, there was, like,
his,
a reason...
His health records must have been brutal.
Well, yeah, because he was a prisoner of war. Yeah. He was in labour camps in Vietnam, and as a result was exposed to the sun a lot, had a lot of melanoma, had surgery for melanoma when he in the early 2000s, had several problems where he couldn't raise his hands above, like, 90 degrees, and there were loads of very distasteful jokes that I definitely didn't laugh at. But he, as a result of this, and also him being one of the oldest candidates ever, released all of his, like, health records from, like, the Vietnam War to the present
day. I feel he's got,
do you,
like,
think that there's a precedent for that for Trump and for Hillary?
His get-out clause is, I fought in Nam, so I'm a war hero.
Bitches. Yeah, not according to Trump, though.
And not according to Trump.
They're kind of demanding people now in this election with a lifetime worth of experience, but not a lifetime's worth of life. And I don't know what they want, exactly. I mean, if you're 68 or 70, there's going to be all kinds of stuff that's wrong with you.
But the hilarious thing about... Did you see when Trump got his doctor to write him, like, this guy is healthy enough to run for the presidency letter? And it basically said, I can safely say that Donald Trump will be the healthiest man to ever run for the presidency.
No,
And subsequently, the doctor said, yeah, basically a load of bouncers came to my office.
I was threatened.
Yeah.
But Franklin Roosevelt famously, like, was wheelchair bound for, like... I don't know if it was his second term, but, like, the last term he was in office during...
Yeah, Reagan exhibited signs of Alzheimer's in his final years in the presidency.
Yeah, so,
what it kind of does, though, the pressure on Hillary, who has just got a temporary illness and, like, will be fine.
Cause, it is a bullshit story in that sense.
It kind of means that if you're a disabled American, what are your chances of ever becoming president when your health records of everyone else have been put in such scrutiny?
So I feel like this wouldn't be such a problem if there weren't already these seeds that had been planted by conspiracy websites that say that she is actually wheelchair bound.
So there's a rumor about
she has body double,
about, like, the thing about her concussion, like, a while back, and there's a rumor about a blood clot in the brain or something. This is probably bollocks.
She slipped and fell over, and now people think that she has a blood clot in the brain, is actually dead, is an android and a lizard person.
She's probably a lizard person. I believe that.
if any of them were a lizard, it'd be Donald Trump, because
Have you seen his his lips, man.
He's more of an amphibious shape, like a frog.
Yeah.
But I think anyone with that level of intellect getting that amount of money must be a lizard.
Because lizards are well known for being money-stealing animals. Very much so.
I don't think Trump's going to win, though. I forgot to call you up on this, I think.
No,
have you seen the state-by-state polling where Hillary's ahead in states that the Democrats just never win?
Yes, but I also see the general trend nationwide going towards him. There's only a 2-point difference between them now.
Yeah, but the nationwide trend isn't that important.
Yeah, that's correct. But then when you look at, I don't know a huge amount of state-by-state polling, but I do read a lot of 538 and listen to their podcast, and they also show this trend towards Trump. I think that all Trump needed was this, which feeds the fires of conspiracy, that is really easy to capitalise on because of the fact that those seeds of doubt are already there. And all he needs is a couple of good debate performances and he's got it.
I think Bernie Sanders would have been the much more likely candidate to beat him.
Biden should have ran.
Yeah, Biden would have been good.
Biden would have been brilliant.
Joe Biden, the current vice president, we should probably say.
I think it's just... I mean,
if you don't know, get out.
I saw one poll that had Hillary ahead, but in the sort of other questions that were asked, Hillary got... It was 66% of voters didn't trust Hillary Clinton, but she was ahead in the poll.
Yeah.
And you think against anybody else, she would be really struggling.
It really should be 100% of voters shouldn't trust Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, why do you hate her?
She's innately untrustworthy.
Why do you hate her? I think it's because you're a misogynist.
Okay, that's fine. I accept that.
Yep, hate the women's. I still maintain that this is going to be really difficult for her. And one of the reasons that I made that video, like, a couple of months ago, well, about a month ago, saying that I thought that Trump was going to win, is because I think the Democrats are resting on their laurels too much. And I think that, especially over the summer, even though it is meant to be a break period, there is There was too much relaxing in the Democrat camp. They thought that because they were against Donald Trump, they had it in the bag.
I think Clinton's more likely to win, but there is a significant chance that Trump will win, and this story
you're loving that
story,
aren't you? That covers all of your bases.
I think
you can't be sure. There's too many variables. So,
well, yeah, but that takes the fun out of guessing, Jimmy.
You have to couch, you know, your prediction in proportionate terms.
I had some doubt before today, but given what I've now heard on the podcast with the worst
the worst
reputation for predictions, now I feel like I feel Trump's fucked.
That is actually a great way of predicting stuff.
Yeah. I predict that he's going to win.
The Right Honourable said that, you know,
the dishonourable law.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I think we've talked this out.
I think Everton won't win the Premiership.
They won't win.
No, another prediction from this podcast.
Thanks very much for being here, Ben. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah,
you may have heard can opening during this podcast. That's because Jimmy and Ben decided to get on the booze.
We've been steadily getting more inebriated throughout this podcast.
Socially lubricated, that's the phrase that I like to use.
That too.
Where can people find you?
Just on Twitter's the best. It's Pen Bowel.
Pen Bowel.
Yeah, Bowel.
That's
with
two L's.
That's not
with two L's.
Confusing in any way, shape, or form.
Ben Powell, but if you change the first two things.
Oh, that's quite clever. Well done.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not that clever.
I'm trying to be nice.
Also, like
here.
A horrendous condition, which is self-inflicted, from which I suffer.
My name is Jazza. You can find me on Twitter at Jazza John. If you disagree with anything that we've said in this podcast, feel free to attack me, because I always love to respond with middle finger emojis.
Was there any problem with me being that honest about my medical records as well?
No.
It's just a dumb thing these days.
Yeah. Apparently, well, we're going to get Hillary releasing all of hers from like 1923, when she was actually born
in an egg.
Jimmy, where can they find you on the internet?
They can find me at JD Nichols on Twitter. If you've got,
On that website.
If you've got any complaints, send them to at Jazza John. That's the best place to direct them.
Thank you very much for listening. If you've gotten this far, leave us 5 stars. Why not? It's nice
on iTunes. On iTunes.
Just mail us some stars if you like. Do that crappy thing that people did in the late 2000s where they bought a star for people on their birthdays. Do you remember that?
No.
I've got like 3 stars named after me because I have lazy uncles and aunts.
You're an old guy.
No need to be rude, is there? Leave us 5 stars on iTunes. Leave us a review as well, because that's always really, really nice. And I might read it out. I haven't actually brought them up this week, so I can't be asked. But thanks in advance for leaving us a nice review. I've been Jazza.
I've been Ben.
I've been Jimmy.
And that's all now. Bye. Okay. Well done, everyone.